Not for all of you, just for the little ones, please. Mark chapter 13, we'll begin reading in verse 1. We're going to actually look at the first part of this and the very last part of Mark 13 this morning. I'm very reticent to preach on this text. There's just a whole lot of material, and it's not real easy to preach on. But I'll begin it this morning, and the next week or two, maybe finish. Mark 13, and we'll begin reading in verse 1. Let's all stand, please. Mark 13, verse 1. As we stand to read the scripture, I need to make another announcement. I don't think I made it. I get very disoriented when I come up here, and I see Brian up here, and it's like, and then Ron was here, I got all just confused. We have a business meeting next Sunday morning right after the service. In case you don't know, we have business meetings a lot in this church. It's going to be a real simple business meeting, taking about four different ideas. Just to give you a forewarning, we're going to recommend the pastors and deacons a couple of new men to serve in our church as deacons. One of them is a very good guy, and one of them is Cliffy, just to let you know ahead of time. One of them is Cliff Cavallis, and one of them is Ade Nanga. So we're going to recommend both of those as deacons next Sunday morning. And we're also going to recommend somebody is going to become a, I don't know what we've exactly, how we're going to abuse him, but Noel is going to get demoted to being a pastor for obvious reasons, since he's always preaching in churches and he's going to be preaching a lot in the Philippines. He needs that. And a couple of other things we need to talk about. You didn't know it was a demotion, Noel. It is. So we're going to do that next Sunday. Well, we're going to have the business meeting. We'll talk about it, but we won't vote on everything until probably a week or two later. So that way you have time to consider all of this. Mark 13 and verse 1. And as he, or Jesus, went out of the temple, one of his disciples saith unto him, Master, see what manner of stones and what buildings are these, are here. I mean, they're looking at one of the great buildings in the ancient world, according to history. We have descriptions of it, but we obviously don't have photographs, and we obviously can't see it. But it was considered one of the great buildings in the ancient world. It was not a single building. It was actually a whole complex, like a fortress, actually. It even had that element. Verse 2, and Jesus answering said unto him, Seest thou these great buildings, plural? There shall not be left one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. I don't think that was what they were looking for. We'll talk about this, friend, but just as an introduction, you understand, in 9/11, people from another country attacked what they thought was important to us. Now, the funny part is the Twin Towers were about the most insignificant buildings to most of us on Earth. What was significant to us was the people were killed. If you would have asked me Twin Towers, I would have had to think, Twin Towers. But that was just one building among many. This was the building in Israel. And Jesus is promising nothing's going to be left. Verse 3. And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives over against the temple, Peter and James and John and Andrew asked him privately, Tell us, when, everybody wants to know this, when shall these things be? And what shall be the sign when all these things shall be fulfilled? Now, all the way to same chapter, verse 31, we're going to actually focus on the end of this. We're going to kind of bookend this morning. I have entitled this End Times, the short story. I'm just going to kind of look at a big picture this morning on how we should approach end times. Verse 31, Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. Everyone look at me, and he's talking about what words? He's talking about what he just got done saying. Look at me, friend. He's talking about this temple's going to be destroyed. Ain't nothing you're going to do about it. It's gone. He's talking about the judgment that's going to come on earth. He's talking about his second coming to earth. I mean, these things, you can take them to the bank. They're going to happen. Verse 32, but of that day and that hour knoweth no man. No, not the angels which are in heaven, neither the Son, but the Father. Take ye, and this is old English, take ye heed. It's emphatic. Watch and pray. For you know not when the time is, for the Son of Man is as a man taking a far journey, who left his house, and when he left his house, he gave authority to his servants and to every man his work, and commanded the porter, or the guy that, you know, kind of ran the place, the door, you know, to watch. Watch ye therefore, for you know not when the master of the house cometh. At even, and by the way, this verse, verse 35, is an important verse for understanding how they told time at night. This is the Roman watches. Starting at 6 p.m., at even was from 6 to 9 p.m. At midnight was from 9 to midnight. At cockcrowing was from midnight to 3 a.m. And what they called early in the morning, or in the morning, was from 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. Remember, in Israel, David, you know this from Venezuela, the lights kind of go out at 6 and kind of come on at 6. Not that way in America. In America, you might have lights on as 10 o'clock at night or 10:30. But in the wintertime, there might be, you know, no sun at 4. In many parts of close to the equator, everything is 6 to 6. So he says, you don't know when the master is coming back. Verse 36, lest coming suddenly he finds you sleeping. And that I say unto you, the four gentlemen, I say unto whom? Everybody, watch. We're going to look at the end times, the short story this morning. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for allowing us the privilege of being here. May I be a help and an encouragement and lay out some broad ideas that will be important as we look at anything that deals with prophecy. It seems like we either go one way, and probably I err that way of not talking about it much, or we go the other way and we're reading crazy books, crazy ideas that have nothing to do with Scripture. Lord, may we chart a path that keeps us on the proper path of understanding the future from a Christian perspective. These things we ask, and we ask in Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. I look around this room and somehow I became one of the older people. So I'm going to mention books that only old people will know. If you lived in the late 60s, early 70s around Christianity, you knew of a book. It was considered one of the best-selling books of all time by Hal Lindsey, called The Late Great Planet Earth. I grew up on those kind of insane books. I used to be fixated on prophecy because there is something in us all. We want to know what's going to happen in the future. Is that correct? But we don't want to just know it's going to happen sometime in the future. We want to know when it's going to happen. Hey, listen, if God's going to destroy America, we don't care about that as long as I'm not here to get destroyed. You know, we not only know what's going to happen, we want to know when. I grew up in that era. Late 60s through the 70s, there were so many books written, and The Late Great Planet Earth was one of the main ones. I learned at that time, and I did not even know Jim Duncan. I learned about black helicopters, and that the hornet, those beasts that come out of the bottomless pit are actually black helicopters. He has one in his garage at his house. We all like to know. I was talking to my wife, and then I think I was talking to my friend Mike Hall Friday about driving conditions. If we're going to drive someplace, we want to know not only where we're going, but we also want to know, is there bad weather coming? Are you this way? You know, you don't want to drive into a blizzard. You don't want to drive, by the way, you don't want to drive in the south right now at all unless you want to swim. You know, there's places you just don't want to be if you're down along the coast right now. And I was talking to Mike and talked to my wife about it first. And I said, I told my wife there was only two times that I was ever afraid to drive. One time, Pastor Emmanuel Malone and I were driving through Pennsylvania, and we got up into the mountainous area of Pennsylvania, and there's that tunnel. You go through the tunnel, and when we got on the other side of the tunnel, it was snowing. And it was snowing so hard that you couldn't see where you were going. You didn't know what was in front of you. That scared you to death. So you slowed way down, and I'm over here in the passenger. He's driving, and I'm like this. The worst thing wasn't that we couldn't see where we were going. We realized the people behind us couldn't see us. So you have to keep moving because you don't want to get run over, but you can't see. In between those two, I think there's two tunnels, was the worst, one of the worst times in my life. Another time was when I came here in 1996. We were driving back from St. Louis to Chicago, and it started to rain, and then it started to hail. You ever been in a hailstorm? And we're putzing along. Jenny had a 1996, I don't know what it was. A Saturn, there it is. I was driving that 1996 Saturn this direction, and the hailstones were coming, and after a while they got so hard and so big, I started thinking, how long will it take before the windshields break? And then I had this idea. I saw an underpass. Maybe I can get under the underpass, but about that time I realized the people behind me couldn't see either. Have you been to these places? By the way, I'm talking about one idea. We want to know what's going to happen in the future. But we not only know what's going to happen, we want to know when it's going to happen. And that's what we're going to address today. I understand it. It's no different than driving down a road. We don't want to drive into a snowstorm or a blizzard or a tornado or a flood. We want to know, and we want to know what's going to happen and when it's going to happen. It's part of who we are. Well, this morning, I'm going to give you the news. Are you ready for the news? We're going to start with two pieces of news. And by the way, friend, when you walk out of here this morning, you should be able to hold one hand up and the other hand up and know the two big pieces of news. Look at verse 1. We will start with verse 1. And this is very simple. There's a lot more things I could say. I'm going to make this really simple this morning. Verse 1 says, "And as he went out of the temple, one of his disciples saith unto him, Master, see what manner of stones and what buildings are here. And Jesus answering said unto him, Seest thou these great buildings?" You see all of this. My friend, very rarely in the New Testament does the Bible use a double negative to affirm that something is absolutely going to happen or not going to happen. This text uses the double negative twice. He says, "There shall not." The thought should never enter your mind that one stone will remain upon another stone. That shall, and again, he uses a double negative again, that shall not, absolutely, beyond any question, not be thrown down. Everyone look at me. I'm going to look at one more verse, 31. Look at verse 30. And by the way, the double negative is again. "Heaven and earth shall pass away, but the thought should never enter your mind that what I'm telling you will just pass away." Here's the first one, folks. The certainty of the future. There is absolutely no question we begin with certainty of the future or certainty of the fulfillment of these events. So when I walk out the door, I know some things. I know, now, I'm not living in AD 33. Or so. I'm living in 2016. But if we go back with the apostles and they're looking at the temple, and Jesus has just said, "You see all this? There's coming a day when you won't even be able to find two stones, one atop the other. This whole place will be destroyed." That's not all he says. But my friend, we start with certainty. We look out at the world and we know what's going to happen. You say, "What do you know is going to happen?" Someday, the second thing I know is going to happen is this thing called a rapture. Sometime in the future, Christ himself shall come in the air, and with the voice of the archangel and the trump of God, he shall call those who are dead, whose bodies are in the ground, whose spirits and souls are with the Lord. And that body will be then transformed and resurrected first. The rest of us that are alive, if we're alive at that moment, will be caught up in the air. There is a certainty of fulfillment. I know that's going to happen. Look at me. But you're asking the question that you can't answer. We'll get to that in a moment. By the way, there's really no need to have this conversation unless you have both hands. Because the problem with Christians since the beginning of times is we want to act like we know what's going to happen and when it's going to happen. We'll get to the second part. There's a certainty to this. We know the temple would be destroyed. It has been destroyed. We know that the Lord is going to catch his people away in the rapture. We know after that is a period of 7 years called the Great Tribulation. We know there's going to be someone the Bible calls the Antichrist that will be revealed at that time. You say, who is the Antichrist? I don't know. Do you? I don't. In my opinion, he could be two heads, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump together. Maybe they get married and become the Antichrist. I don't know. But all I know, friend, is there is coming the rapture. I know that. Certainty of fulfillment. A tribulation period for 7 years. An Antichrist will come to the scene. And you can't turn on the news without murders, rapes, pillages, bombs going off. People now, in America, we want to outlaw guns. Hey, look at me. In France, they killed a whole lot more people with a truck than they did with guns. What are we going to do, outlaw trucks? After we get rid of the trucks, cars? I mean, I don't think, but by the way, Antichrist is going to come to the scene and he's going to put the hammer down and he's going to establish some kind of a peace. Now, it's not the kind of peace you want. You say, what are you saying, Pastor Warren? There is a certainty of fulfillment. The rapture is next, the tribulation period, the Antichrist. At the end of that Antichrist, the second coming of Christ, he will return to the earth. He will establish his kingdom on earth. He will do away with his enemies. And for 1,000 years, we will find peace and prosperity on earth. We will then look to Jerusalem because the headquarters, by the way, is not America. Hello? It's not Ireland. It's not Poland. It's not Russia. It's Jerusalem. Jesus will rule and reign from there. All nations and people of the earth will come there. That will be the center of existence. These things I know. I know them. All right. Are you ready for this? Look back at Mark chapter 13 and verse 32. I told Walter this morning I was going to pick on him, so everybody knows who Walter is. When you're done with this morning, you're going to know the guy. He's back here. I guarantee you he has these books in his library. Okay, you'll understand in a moment. So we've asked the question, certainty of fulfillment. We know what's going to happen. The only thing we know for sure is the rapture is going to occur, 7 years tribulation, Antichrist is going to establish peace, and there's a lot of other details. Christ will return, destroy all the stupid, establish his kingdom on earth, and there's some other things we know too. But what don't we know? Verse 32. But of the day, of that day, and that hour knoweth who? Who? Let's make this modern English. No one. Doesn't mean women know and men don't. No one knows. No, not the angels which are in heaven. Neither, did you get the next line? The Son. But the Father, the only one that knows this is the Father. We're going to read some more. Everyone look at me. Got it? First point, the certainty of fulfillment. When we read of prophecy, we know these things will happen. But the other hand says the uncertainty of timing. We know what's going to happen. We don't know when it's going to happen. Say it with me. We know what's going to happen. We don't know when it's going to happen. Anything you ever hear different than that, you're in trouble. But we'll have people walk right here and go buy some book at some Christian bookstore, 72 signs why Jesus is returning by Christmas. And Jesus says, I'm sorry, we know what's going to happen. Certainty of fulfillment, but you don't know when. Well, that's not enough. Verse 33. Take ye heed, watch and pray, for ye know not when the time is. Verse 35. Watch ye therefore, for you know not when the master of the house cometh. You don't know if he's coming from 6 to 9 p.m. You don't know if he's coming from 9 to midnight. You don't know if he's coming from midnight to 3 a.m. You don't know if he's coming from 3 to 6 a.m. He says, you need to watch yourself, for you know not when the master of the house cometh. Why? Verse 36, lest coming suddenly he find you. Now, if Pastor Warren got up here and showed you some video slides, look at me, and talk to you about the Trilateral Commission. Ooh, this stuff is still on television. And all of it is trying to tell you the one thing in the eyes that Jesus himself said, you do not know and you can not know. So why do pastors constantly do this? Because Christians just love this kind of stuff. It's good gossip. So here's where we are. We are certain, we have certainty about future fulfillment of these events. We have uncertainty about the time. And by the way, if that was true in the first century and hadn't changed a bit in the year 2016, we still have certainty. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away. We know this is going to happen. But on the other hand, we don't know when it's going to happen. I think that's pretty clear. I'll say it in another form. What is the takeaway? Here's the takeaway. No one knows. The angels do not know. In his earthly ministry, by choice, remember when the Son of God took upon human flesh, he humbled himself, which means he gave up willingly, intentionally, certain rights. And he gave up the external manifestation of his glory. So while Jesus was on earth, he didn't know. He could have known, but he chose not to. Only the Father knows. But you say, Pastor Warren, I know somebody who knows. In Sunday school this morning, I talked about a guy. You can look this up, by the way. Do not trust me. I know there are people here to go to sleep on every sermon. I recommend you quit trusting me. Actually think on your own. Look up a guy's name, Miller. Are the Millerites. In the 1830s, he got the idea from the book of Daniel that he could count up and he knew exactly when Jesus was coming. Happened, Gail, where did it happen? New York State. Wonder why. The center of all stupid at that period of time. You know, Mormons and all kinds of things came out of that same location. And by the way, friend, he just knew the time. He started setting dates. He came out and said that Jesus would come somewhere between 1843 and 1844. Finally, he set an exact date, or his followers did. There's debate about this. And he said, October 22nd, 1844, Jesus will come. And his people sold their livings, they sold their houses, they gathered together, and Jesus... They call that, by the way, look it up yourself. If you Google these three words, you'll get this article. The Great Disappointment. Because people then had to say, well, Jesus didn't come. I guess, what was wrong? By the way, I'm not going to get into this, but the whole Seventh-day Adventism comes out of that. That great disappointment. And somebody got the brilliant idea that Jesus didn't come to earth, but he came to someplace in heaven and cleansed a temple. And you're like, what? Because, by the way, Jesus says, you can be certain about this. This building is going to be destroyed. I'm coming back in glory. There's going to be, not in this text, but in others, there's going to be a rapture of the church. There's going to be a seven. You can be certain of this. That's the what, the when. You're not going to know. Now, look at me. Now I'm dating myself. I guarantee you Walter has this book. 88 Reasons Why Jesus is Coming Back in 1988. Walter, do you still have that book? Surely you used to have it. Don't be lying to me. You probably have an underline in your house. By the way, did Jesus come back in 1988? Yes or no? You guys aren't with me. Oh, the guy then changed his mind. He says it was 1989. He was off a year. How about this? Was it 3 or 4 years ago, a guy that owned Christian radio stations all over the country? What's his name? I can't remember it. It's Dutch. Harold Camping. He predicted Jesus was returning. Do you remember that? It was all over the news. What was the problem? The very thing that Jesus says you can't know is the very thing that he said he could know. My friend, when you walk out the door, look at me, when you walk out, I want you to know two things. The certainty of what Jesus said is going to happen, and the uncertainty of when it's going to happen. That's just not your business. And if I've heard everything. Look back, if you would. I'm sorry, I'm going to be a little cynical here. Look back, if you would, to verse, let's see, what verse is it, 32? Is it 32? Yeah. I actually heard a person say this. No kidding. But of that day and of that hour knoweth no man or no individual, no, not the angels which are in heaven. But they said, well, but if the angels on earth, he might know. It's no limit to our stupid. You say, when's Jesus returning? I can tell you when I think. Soon. It's imminent. It could happen right now. It could happen before the service is over. It could happen before tonight. But that's all we know. The Bible teaches us to be ready, but it never tells us when. So, I want everyone to look at me. I had an uncle. He died of cancer, smoking. Good Baptist. Smoked his whole life. He retired from work, and this is what he did for the rest of his life. He let his wife work. He put his feet up. And every time I saw him, by the way, likable person. If he came to this church, if he was alive, you would like him. He was the most likable guy you'd ever run into. And all he ever did was smoke his cigarettes, drink his coffee, and talk about Jesus returning while he had his feet up. That's what prophecy does to people. By the way, that's not what prophecy is supposed to do to people. Here's what you need to know. Certainty of fulfillment of these events. Yes, these are going to happen. Uncertainty, according to Jesus himself, of timing. You're not going to know. Let's look at Acts chapter 1. Would you look there? I just want to read another verse outside that. We're going to come right back to Mark. I think it's worthy of us looking at this. Acts chapter 1 and verse 6. Some of you remember, you're old enough to remember Y2K. Do you not remember all the foolishness of Christians at Y2K? And the best Bible exegete in this whole church that week was Mrs. Losey. Jan, your mother. I remembered Y2K, the world was ending. We even had churches around here selling generators, selling food, because, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. And I remember that night, we were all gathered here doing the crazy stuff that we do, but we're a little more sober when Mrs. Losey was around. I don't know why. We were down there, and it was about midnight, and she just said, you know, if the world ends tonight, that's okay. I'm going to be with my, I don't know if she said something like this, I'm going to be with my church family. By the way, what happened that night? Acts chapter 1, verse 6. When they therefore were come together, they asked of him, saying, Lord, will thou at this time restore again the kingdom to Israel? That's a good question. Lord, folks, look up here. Here's the question. They kind of knew there was going to be this thing in between. We call it the church age. They knew that Israel was not going to be any, well, I mean, they knew it wasn't going to be anymore after Christ's death, burial, and resurrection. They knew Israel was going to be set aside. The temple hadn't been destroyed yet, but they knew it was going to happen. So they said, okay, Lord, then when are you going to restore Israel? That's way down the road, folks. The whole church age, they didn't know how long that was going to be. We don't either. It's at least till today. And then there's going to be the rapture of the church, and then there's going to be the tribulation. And then after that is when Christ comes and establishes his kingdom, which will be the restoration of Israel. They're wondering, when is this going to happen? So Jesus said, I got the magic calendar just for you. just, by the way, because you are so special, I have the exact date just for you. Look what he says. It is not for you to know the times or the seasons, which the Father hath put in his... By the way, folks, let's make it modern English. It ain't your business. That's God's business. You say, when's the rapture going to happen? I don't know. It's not my business. He goes on to say, it's not for you to know this, which the Father has put in his own power, but ye shall receive power after that the Holy Ghost has come upon you, and you shall be witnesses unto me both in Jerusalem and in Judea and in Samaria and unto the uttermost part of the earth. My friend, and this leads us right where I wanted to go. We have two things. Certainty. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words won't. These things will happen. Temple will be destroyed. In the future, Christ will come for the church at the rapture. 7 years of tribulation. Revelation of Antichrist, that horrific 7 years. Christ will return in glory to establish his kingdom. That's certain. Uncertainty about timing. What do we do in between? Well, it says it here. Look back at Mark 13, 34. Would you look with me, please? Mark 13, 34 tells us, gives us somewhat of a parable and tells us what our life is supposed to be about. So I have said, certainty about the fulfillment of events, uncertainty about timing, and now we got to back up and say, okay, if I know this is going to happen, but I don't know when, what do I do in the meantime? Is that a good question? I'll wait till you look up here. Is that a good question? See, I'm not playing games with prophecy ever in this church as long as I pastor here. We'll not be talking about black helicopters because Jesus doesn't talk about that stupid stuff. But he does talk about something. So if we know these things are going to happen, but we don't know when, what are we supposed to be doing in between? He tells us exactly. Verse 34. Mark 13, 34, there is no question what we're supposed to know. For the Son of Man, and this is implied in the text, is as a man taking a far journey. You see, when Jesus died on the cross, was buried and resurrected, he ascended back to the Father. As an image, it was like a person that was wealthy that took a journey. When he took his journey, he left his home, his house. Jesus left earth. But when he left earth, he didn't give us magic glasses to talk about when he was returning. He gave us authority to his servants and to every man, each one of those, each man's work. And he commanded the porter, the person that controlled the gate of the house, so to speak, to watch. So number three, you say, what do we do in between? There is certainty of fulfillment, uncertainty of timing, when it's going to happen. So we know what, we don't know when, and what do we do? Number three, there is this issue of authority and responsibility for the work. God left us to do some things. God left us to do some things. I'm going to illustrate in a moment. I sometimes walk past people. We're a little distracted today. That's fine. I'm just going to get your attention because you're going to get this whether you want it or not. I walk past people, and I want to ask them a question. Don't you have something to do? Don't you have something to do? When the Bible talks about the future, the Bible never says, kick your feet up, read the magic book and know when Jesus is coming. The Bible fixes us. Listen, God gave us authority, meaning the ability, opportunity, and he gave us the responsibility, look at me, for certain work. What are you here for? Don't you have something to do? I'm not talking about watch some more. Oh, let's watch some more TV. That'll solve your problems. Let's get some more naps in front of the TV. That'll help. What? Don't you have something to do? You say, you're talking about being at church. I never mentioned church. I'm asking you a question. Don't you have something that God himself put you on earth to do? Actually, several somethings. Many different things. Don't you have something to do? God gave us authority, the ability, opportunity and gifting, and the responsibility to do certain work. What is that work? I don't know what yours is. I'll try to illustrate this two different ways. Dave's here, isn't he? Dave and I went yesterday and picked up some tables, or not tables, what were they, chairs? Desks, there you go, for the kids. Amy had purchased some desks someplace. What was that city? Who? I don't know where Roselle at, but it's a long way from here. We drove down, picked up these desks and some other stuff, and came back, and we talked on the way there. And I told Dave, and I told Mike Hall this the day before, because we ate lunch together. I said, I think I've watched television more in the last 2 weeks than I have in the last 5 years. You say, what were you watching? The news? I freely admit I love to watch the Olympics. Do you realize watching that little girl, Simone something, Biles, she's not human. She can't be human. First of all, I can get trying to do that, but how do you smile and do what she did? I was in pain just thinking, oh, my back, my knees. I'm watching, and it wasn't just her. It was the girl that won the second, the silver medal. And I'm amazed. You know, I almost believe that maybe, I don't know that she's a Christian. By the way, listen to me. See, you're being way too religious for me. I'm not interested in religion. I'm interested in asking you a question. Why did God put you here? Did God put you here to do something, or you just sit around and look at yourself? I saw that girl and the other one, Allie, that won the silver. When they did the tumbling runs, I think they were above my head. So I got motivated. And I thought, I'm going to try this. What are you laughing about? You don't think I can do this? I feared, though, if I tried this, several things would happen. Number one, I would be in the hospital. Secondly, there would be an earthquake. And thirdly, there might be tsunamis along the coast. Do you think she gets up in the morning and thinks, where can I put my feet up and do nothing for the rest of the day? And then, by the way, no matter how you cut sports, this young lady is phenomenal. God bless her. I'm happy for her and the whole team. But then there's this guy named Michael Phelps. You know, I think if he's a believer, which I don't know, he'll be teaching fish how to swim in heaven. It's like, who is this person? How does somebody do? Listen, I talked to my dad, and my dad never got to do it, but his father did. My grandfather watched Babe Ruth play baseball. And people for the rest of their life look back and said, do you realize you have seen a guy swim that you will never see someone like that ever again? Four Olympics or some ridiculous number? Or five, I don't know how many. And you're sitting there, and I'm thinking, he even said, now I don't know how much truth, and I don't know if he's a Christian, and I let people demonstrate their Christianity, not talk about it. But he read Rick Warren's book, Purpose Driven Life. He heard some Christianity. But I look at the guy and think, maybe part of the reason God put him on earth is that swimming. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. Don't you have something to do? Jesus says, we know I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. Look at me, but I'm not telling you when. You're not going to know. So drop this one, back up, and say, but God has given Ralph Warren some abilities, opportunities, and the responsibility. Look what that verse says. Read with me the verse, please. It seems to be a very clear verse. He gave authority to his servants and to every or each man, each individual, his work. Which means this, friend, if you're a believer, you ought to have a pretty good idea of what God put you on earth to do. And God didn't put you on earth for entertainment, sleeping. God put you on earth to do some things. And those things could be many things. Years ago, I was actually asked this question. There was a family in our church named Augustines in St. Louis. The man was a World War II veteran. And he and his wife came and picked my wife and I up one night to go out to eat. They had a brand new Dodge of some kind. And I think he and his wife were both short. He was probably 5'6" or 7". She was 5'2" or so. And they picked me up in this brand new vehicle. Jenny and I, and they asked us, you know, they wanted to ride in their new car. So they let us get in the back, but they weren't thinking that I am 6'2", not 5'6". So when I got in the back of the car, the back of the car slanted down. So when I got in there, I had to... Do you ever try to do that for an hour? We drove an hour to South St. Louis County, and I'm like, I had a headache for 2 days after that. It gives me a headache thinking about it. So I had to, and sometimes I would do this to my wife. I'd lean way over to her, and I could straighten my neck out. So it was a miserable ride. I remember the ride, and I remember one other thing. Mr. Augustine looked at me. I don't remember his first name. My wife would. He looked at me and he said, "I want to ask you a question, Pastor Warren. What is the greatest thing that you've ever learned in your life?" He told me this. He said, "By the greatest thing I ever learned, I learned when I was in World War II in the Navy." I looked at him and I said, "Well, it would be about three things. Salvation through Christ alone. Can't get away from that. Number two, and this is a life changer for me, that God is sovereign." Let's make it in your language. God's in control. Boy, that gives me comfort today. You know what I said number three was? And this is what he was looking for. I said, I believe practically the greatest thing I ever learned is that God created me to do something. God created, look at me, not for me, not for pleasure. God created me to do something. I actually believe when Jesus ascended back to the Father, every single believer that will ever live in between, he gave them something to do. You find a Christian and you want to walk up to him and whack him and say, "Don't you have something to do?" The answer is yes, you do. It's not just one thing, it's many things. It can be a husband, it can be a wife, it can be a parent, it can be a father, it can be a mother, it can be a son, it can be a daughter. It's all of these things. But when I find people bored, I do not understand you. There are people in this room living for 5 years from now. You can't wait till you go someplace. Don't you have something to do? We look at the last concept. The last concept. Certainty of fulfillment, uncertainty of timing, the authority and responsibility to work, to do something God made you to do. And we look at verse 5. We're going to go down the list. The fourth concept is the necessity of staying alert. So you know what's going to happen. Number two, you don't know when it's going to happen. You know you got work to do. And the fourth thing that you got to get is, I must stay, look at me, I got to stay awake. The most repeated concept in this whole passage is that statement. Verse 5, Jesus answering said unto them, "Take heed, lest any man deceive you or lead you astray." Take heed is simply a word, blepete, which means to watch out, to look out, to make sure your eyes are open. Verse 9, but take heed to yourselves. Same word. You there, keep your eyes open. Look out. Watch out. Take heed. Verse 23, but take ye heed. It adds that word ye there. That's actually added in Greek. It's you. Look out. Watch out. Wake up. Verse 33. Take ye heed. Again, it's the same word, blepete. All of these are. Look out. Watch out. Keep your eyes open. Verse 33 again has a different word. Take ye heed and watch, which means literally stay awake. Verse 34, when Jesus ascends to the Father, using the analogy, and gives us authority and a job to do, he commands the person that controls the door to watch. Grigorite, and it's a word that has that same kind of idea, to watch out, to be on guard, to be on watch. Verse 35, watch ye therefore, for you know not when the master of the house cometh. Verse 36, lest coming suddenly he find you what? Verse 37 is the most significant verse of all. And what I say unto you, four disciples, remember, Peter, James, Andrew, and which one is it? Verse 3 says it's Peter, James, and John, and Andrew. He says, what I'm saying to you four, I say unto everyone, I say unto all, watch. The necessity of staying alert. Please look at me. It's one thing on a special service to get excited. Woo! 30 seconds later, you're right taking the nap again. Your whole life is one of sleepiness. By the way, you know what it means to be sleepy? It means nothing ever gets through to you. We walk around in a daze. Here it is. Here's prophecy in a nutshell. We know what's going to happen. We don't know when it's going to happen. There's certainty about this and there's uncertainty about this. But there is this authority and responsibility given to us to fulfill some work. And lastly, the necessity of staying awake, alert, watching out, keeping your eyes open, keep moving forward. I've told this story two or three times in my 20 years here, but it's the best story that it gives the picture. When I joined the Navy in 1975, in boot camp, I was introduced, Cliffy. He wasn't even a master chief. He was a first class, mean as a snake. Company Commander Rogers, they called him. We called him. We had the privilege of standing. What does the Navy call it, Jim? Watch. By the way, sleepy ones, what does the Navy expect you to do when you're on watch? They actually expect what these texts mean. They expect you to look up here, use these things. They expect you to stay awake. And they don't expect when they come looking for you to be sleeping. Now, I had this in my bones because my dad talked about World War II and talked about Korea. And back in those days, I don't think they were as nice as they are today. If they caught you sleeping, they just shot you. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm on watch. I didn't know what that meant. But all I know is when the watch list came out, my name was from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. Have you ever tried to stay awake at 2 a.m. to 6 a.m.? That's the wrong time to try to stay awake. So they put us on watch. The list came out. Everybody had a four-hour stretch of watch, and mine was from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m., and they told us where we had to go. And we were in a barracks that was three flights up. We were at the top, and my watch was the next floor down. And I walked in there at 2 a.m., I didn't know what it was like. I walked in there, and the lights were out. And the only thing on was, look over in the corner. You see that exit light? There was a handful of, like, exit lights. So it's 2 a.m. The place is pitch black, and I am standing guard duty over nothing. There's no one here. There's nothing here but empty bunks and bathroom. But I know I better not fall asleep. It was easy. When I first got there, I was, boy, those eyes were open. I was on watch. I walk around the whole perimeter of that place. Somewhere after about 4 a.m., I started thinking, this is really stupid. And I'm sorry, there was a chair. I won't get a chair, but there was a chair. I will get a chair. This one will be fine. There was a chair, and I wonder if our company commander put it there. There was a chair in the corner of that big, long rectangular building. There was a chair sitting in the corner where you could sit down, put your head in the corner, and do a little cat napping. Look at me. Did you realize how many times Jesus told you, you know who the you is, to watch? I will freely confess, somewhere after 4 a.m., that chair started looking better and better. I'm thinking, but I said, nah, I can't do that. I kept walking. I'd go back into the head because there was a big head where you took showers and everything, and they're ugly, but I went back there. I kept walking, and I don't know, was it 5 a.m.? I thought, man, oh, man, I am just exhausted. Just 10 minutes. I'll put my head against the wall. If someone comes in, I'll wake up. I walk back towards the chair. This is a true story. I walk back towards the chair. I don't know if I was going to sit down or not. But I looked down at the end of the building. You know, there's a long rectangular building, and I was like in that corner, and over there is where you came down the stairwell to get to this floor. And I saw something like a lightning bug. And I remember, what is that glow? Then come, anybody know? It was a cigarette. My company commander was coming to see if I was sleeping. For the last 41 years, I've been thanking God I didn't put my bottom in that chair. You say why? Because that company commander, I don't know what he would have done. I don't want to know. I know it wasn't time of war, but I didn't want to find out. Can I tell you something and we're done this morning? Please look at me. Do you understand? Friend, Jesus is coming. He's coming for his church. It could happen right now. We know what's going to happen. He's coming for his own. There's going to be a 7-year tribulation, a horrible, unbelievable, the worst time in the history of mankind. Antichrist will rule and reign at least some of that period of time, and all the chaos. At the end of that, friend, Jesus returns in glory to establish his kingdom. We know what's going to happen. We just don't know when. So what do we do in between? I'm going to ask you the question. Don't you have something to do other than think about where you could be, other than where you're at? Don't you have... Didn't the Lord of glory give you an element of authority and responsibility, a certain work or works for you? When I look at Michael Phelps, humanly speaking, he was created to swim. When I look at this lovely young lady, Simone Biles, I think's her name, oh my goodness, she was created to do all that crazy stuff. I actually one time got on that beam 4 foot up. Have you ever even tried that? Just walking, I thought, this is insanity. And they're going, I think she was created for that. What were you created for? Lastly, the necessity of being alert. I'll say this and I'm done. It's very difficult to stay awake at 5 a.m. When's the danger time? If you know anything about military history, they always preferred attack. Now the military, we have night stuff. They always preferred to attack right at the early part of the dawn, when most people are doing what? Stay alert. Watch. Let's pray, please. Father,